Good morning, sir. Before we get started, what is your name, sir?
Craig Fullweather.
Okay, Mr. Fullweather, I believe that the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson is going to conduct your hearing, so just hold on to the phone, and the next voice you hear will be that of the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson.
Okay, so for the record, could you please state your full name and your ADC number for us for the record?
Yes, Craig Fullweather, 039694.
Okay, Mr. Fullweather, you're appearing before the right thing. Yes, sir.
I can be able to hear.
Is this any better, sir?
Yeah, I have a hearing problem.
Oh, okay, all right. I'm going to try that. Is this any better?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so you're going to be the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency. I'm going to introduce the board members to you conducting your hearing today. To my far left, your right, would be the Honorable Louis Fidelis. Coming down the line is the Honorable David Neal. In the middle, we have the Honorable Dr. C.T. Light, who is our board chair. To my immediate left, we have the Honorable Mrs. Gail Rittenhouse. Sir, my name is Michael Johnson. I'll be acting as your hearing lead this morning. Are you with him, Mr. Fullweather?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Sir, you have been certified to appear before this board for an absolute discharge, regular parole, or home arrest. Is that right?
Yes, it is.
Okay. You are currently serving a life sentence for burglary. You became parole eligible on March 10th of 1993. You actually have two life sentences that looks like they are both running concurrent to each other. Is that your understanding?
Yes, sir, it is.
Okay. So I have your inmate progress report here. It says that you did not have an approved residence at the time. However, you contacted the Manor House, Halfway House, Veterans Center. I also do have the documentation where you did contact them, and they've accepted you, so that's been a little bit of change in what we actually have here. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, that you're also eligible to receive some services from the VA, and you've applied, and you're also eligible to apply for receiving some funding for 1 year, for the first month's rent that you actually have, is that right?
That's correct.
Okay, so looks like you'll have a couple in the last 5 years tickets that you've actually received. One of them is, looks like, for disrupted count, was found not guilty as a minor. You have another citation for disobeying a verbal, and then you have one for harassment, which was also a minor. Can you tell me a little bit about the one for harassment, what that was about?
Yes, sir. First, I want to thank you for allowing me to hear you today. That was a very bad situation. At that time, I needed medical attention. And it just so happened we were on lockdown because they were in smoking lights and had trucks on the truck on the yard. So it wasn't anything to do with any problems with the unit. But my blood pressure earlier that day was pretty high. And I was told by the nurse if I started feeling better, inform a staff member and to get back to the medical. Because I had taken my blood pressure medicine for that day already, and normally when I start feeling bad, I'll take some extra, but they don't want me self-medicating myself with any extra pills. So I stood there and I was begging the officer to get me to medical, please get me to medical, please. And I was a little delirious at that time. So that's when the road write-up came for notice I'm disobeying, because I'm locked in my run, and I live in the back of the run, away from the guard stage, and I said, I can't move, I just stood there and said, please, we give me a medical, I'm out of it, and call a sergeant and things like that, if necessary, I wasn't being disrespectful, but I knew what I was feeling at that moment, and I've gone through that period of time when my blood pressure was, well, by the time they got me over, along with the write-up, my blood pressure was 182 over 113. And that's scary to me. And I don't know if anybody's aware of what blood pressure does, but that, you know, was way high, and they had to give me some emergency medication to keep me over there in about an hour until it got down into a normal range. But that was about, and I couldn't, you know, for the life of me, I couldn't understand where their harassment came from. I tried to explain to this mayor what the situation was, but once again, being the officer right now today, we don't have any problems. I just ask them to be more considerate when I have these problems, you know, because I do get delirious.
Okay. So that happened this year, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, you had one other citation that occurred this year too, which had to do with the work area that you were assigned and washing your clothes. What was that? What was that all about?
At that time, I needed clothes washing, and the individual that was assigned refused to do it. I didn't have much clothes, which they don't give, because he said it wasn't my day to have clothes washed. I only had three changes of clothes, and I kind of had an accident in my pants, because with blood pressure pills that I take, it makes me have to urinate a lot, quite a lot, and that happened, and I needed them washed. And he said, no, it's not your day. I said, I'm not going to have clothes to sit in my house for another day. It's not like this, so he refused to do it. And I just said, well, I've got to have them done. I just went out and got them myself, because I had no other clothes to wear.
Okay, so did you make a statement to the CO and they just quoted it here saying none of these white motherfuckers are going to wash my clothes?
Yes, I did.
And so what do you mean by that, sir?
Well, sir, this is prison. And there is a very high level of racism that goes on in this system, and that's something that's been going on for years, and by me being the only African American on that particular run, with no other minorities, that's how I felt, because I've seen them do other people's stuff without question, and for him to refuse me, that's what it felt like to me.
So was it, and I'm just correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm understanding you to say that statement was a statement made more in saying that they weren't going to like wash their clothes because you were black, or that you didn't want them washing their clothes?
Well, I didn't know when that part, but that's what I explained to the officer. I said, you know, I see the situations here, how I'm treated, and they're aware of how I'm treated, you know, It's a bad feeling to a lot of people when they're in that position in these buildings, when you're the only minority, and we're all aware of it on the yard, they're aware of it in the institution, but their thing is, there's nothing they can do about it. I don't have a problem per se with it, you know, because that's not where I am, but I will be vocal when I'm confronted with it.
Okay.
And I'm not gonna be disrespectful, so I'm just letting them know I'm aware of how it is here because they can get away with things, but the African Americans can't. And that's where it's widely known throughout this entire system.
All right. So I see that you've been before this parole board numerous times, that you've actually been before the parole board. I see that your first time before the parole board was in 1988, but it looks like in 1993, you were before the board and they granted you home arrest. And you were home arrest for, it looks like, 6 months. And then they granted you regular parole in October of November of 93. And you were on parole. And then it looks like you were there from 93 to 97, about 4 years, before you were revoked. Is that right?
Yes.
So, do you recall why you were revoked back in 97?
Yeah, I really do, and I tried to really explain this to the board at that time, what was happening with me. I had gotten injured on my job as a turning plumber. I had been going through a number of surgeries starting in 1995, and something that I didn't recognize at the time that was going on with me, because it led up to one surgery after another. I had told the board I went from $1,200 take-home pay to $1,200 a month. That's all working time pays. And I'm living according to that $1,200 a month. And at that time, you know, $800 apartment, bought me a brand new car, things like that. And, you know, take care of everything, doing what I'm doing, working 6 days a week, 12, 13 hours a day. But when that injury happened, something that started getting into me that I had recognized, which they are saying today is a huge problem in this country, I got hooked on pain pills. I got straight addicted to pain pills and didn't realize that I had become addicted to these pain pills, even though they're coming from the doctor. Because I still had to take care of my life, even though I'm coming out of surgeries, going back to surgeries, not knowing when I'm going to go back to work. Depression began to set in. I explained that to my parole officer at the time. And I, you know, I'm still getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning thinking I got somewhere to go, you know, and I have no place to go, but I'm used to getting up at that time to go to work. You know, and sitting at in the house, you know, watching TV, that's not what I was used to doing because I was never home during the daytime. And I had family members to attend to and things like that. But the first time the doctor told me, he said, I'll have you back in 6 months. So when I stepped out with Alex, my parole officer, said, man, I'll be off for 6 months. I think I can handle it. And it'd be okay. Well, that 6 months passed, and I still have the problem. Now I go back in for another surgery. I didn't have the last surgery on this injury until 2015, that's how long this has been going on.
So.
And I have, yeah.
How are you doing?
Where I started, when I got violated, being addicted to painkillers, then it went to something else.
Okay. What else did it go to, sir?
It went to cocaine.
Okay. So how are you doing with that injury now, sir?
Well, like I said, I finally had the doctor do something that most people probably wouldn't have done, but I had no choice because I'm tired of it. I had to excuse it. I said, you know, I don't want to come back to it no more. I'm tired of going through this. It's hindering my skills are derived from my legs and my hands because I work construction. This is what I do for a living. This is what I love to do. And I'm good at it. But I need my hands. So I just had him refuse it. And he said, this will be for the rest of your life. I said, well, if that's going to cause me not to have to come back here, I have to take that risk. I mean, if you look at my, I've got scars all over my hand. And it's just a hand. And that's where it went into depression. It's just my wrist trying to reattach my hand. And I just got to the point where I said, I can't, it's my hand, that's it, you know? And I couldn't do anything.
Okay.
So that was the decision, and finally, the only problem I still haven't been able to do is settle with them, so I can't be, I've never got released from the doctor because the surgery was going on, the process was going on, when I got violated. And because I'm not out there, I couldn't settle this claim with the Industrial Commission. I couldn't kill it. So they had to suspend it. And I can't walk out of here and go to work until that's done. And that's all I'm trying to do because I had companies that was willing to hire me anywhere I put an application in.
Well, Mr. Fiorello, it looks like you were revoked in 1977. After you were revoked, you were out for about 4 years. And you go to the surgeons of yourself.
97.
I'm sorry. So it looks like you came before this board several more times after that and was denied or here you continued your hearing. But it looks like in 2001, you were again paroled to regular parole. And then 1 year, almost a year later, you were continued on your parole. Looks like you came back before the board, you were continued on parole in October of 2001. Then it looks like in 2002, July of 2002, you came before the board and you had your parole revoked. That was the second time that your parole was revoked and you had been out for about a year, came before this board a couple of times, but looks like in October 9th of 2001, your parole was July 9th of 2002 that you actually had your parole revoked. And then it looks like you came back before this board a few more times, but in March of 2004, you were granted parole for the third time, sir, during which time you were granted regular parole. And then it looks like you had a special hearing. Your parole looks like it was revoked on July 9th of 2004. However, you came back before this board on January 7th of 2005, and you were granted parole again, sir. That's like about the third or fourth time that you actually granted parole. And then it looks like in about a year and a half later, in July of 2006, your parole was revoked again, and that's fourth or fifth time. And then looks like in October of 2013, after you had been revoked in 2006, you spent a number of years back in prison, and then on October 13th, you were granted parole again, sir. And then looks like you were out for almost year and a half, 2 years, and you had a parole revocation. Your parole was revoked. However, you were continued on parole, and then you had a modification on October 15th. I mean, March 15th, you had it modified, and then it looks like December of 2015, so your parole was revoked again. I mean, you've been in and out, sir. I'm trying to understand that you've had your freedom about five times, four or five times in and out with the continuation. And each time, sir, you wind up getting revoked. What's going to be the difference? You just, your last time that you were revoked was in December of 2015, sir, which is about 3 years ago, and you've been before this board several times, and each time you've been denied. My question and what I'm trying to understand, why is it, you know, there's not many people that have that many opportunities to have their freedom and continually wind up being revoked?
Johnson, and I agree with you. You know, I had this time, each time I've come back, I've had, you know, I took the time not to dwell on what I didn't do or what I should have done. I took that time to correct the errors that caused me to go into those directions. I can't blame no one, and I've always said that to the board. I'm only looking at me and Vera on these matters. I'm not looking at the board, I'm not looking at the board officers, I'm not looking at no one but myself, okay? That's not what this is about for me. What I'm looking at is they have really difficult times that I had, and I didn't adjust properly to them. There was a period of time, and I tried to tell this board, when my mother passed away in 2002, that took a lot out of me because I was incarcerated, and the last voice that I heard ringing in my ear was her screaming through the phone after my sister called the institution to let me know that she was in the hospital. 30 minutes later, she calls back and tells me my mom's dead. I took that very, very hard because prior to that, I lost my dad. And I'm trying to understand what was going on with me when I had no understanding of it before. During the 4-year period, I didn't have these problems at all. You know, not with the drugs, not with none of that. I didn't have any problems with it. So I'm trying to figure out what led me in this direction, okay? And I realized what it was. But once I began working the change and the choice that I made that would help me make that change, I didn't realize even making that change, it was going to get more difficult. It was going to get more challenging. And I had to learn how to, as they say, resist the devil. Because I knew if I wanted to ever stay out of prison, and this is what I speak to guys about, if I ever want to stay out of prison, it's not about what I can do. Because in myself, I can do nothing. Nothing. So I made that final step in the direction that I wanted my life to go to. And I accepted for the first time the spiritual guidance of God. That's what got me going in the direction that I was. And to explain it to the members of this board, if any of you have began your walk or anything, you know it's difficult, especially coming from this environment. Okay? I've had to tolerate a lot of things. I've had to go through a lot of things in order to prove that I'm worthy of that, let alone prove myself worthy, that I'm worthy to be released by this board. And that's where it was, and I've come to full circle on that point. You know, I've resisted everything that's come at me, as I explained to the members previously. I was returned in 2015. I was attacked in Yuma. Didn't fight back. I was attacked. They transferred me to another prison. My property, $300 worth of my property was stolen. I was attacked again. That's how I ended up here. Because everybody's under the impression that, well, he's not going to fight back, he's not going to do this, he's not going to do that. And that's what was happening. But my life previously, without that, I would have fought back. I wouldn't have no concern about going to this parole board saying, man, I don't care if I get out, man. I'm not going to let you put your hands on me. You know, I'm not going to let you steal my property. I'm not going to let you do these things. Okay? I said, you know, these are just things that are more important to me was my family. And that's what I kept considering. Okay? You got me. You got me.
Okay, Mr. Llewellyn. So let me ask you a question. By my count, and I could be off a little bit, but my count, you have been granted parole 6 times, 7 times, and continued on parole 1 time. And I'm looking at, and I'm listening to you.
It should be two terms. It should be two terms that I was, my parole was reinstated.
Okay.
Because once I was brought back into custody on a warrant where they said that I had reported back to the halfway house, but I had not had, I was not out. I still had time to get back to the halfway house.
Okay. So, listen to me, Mr. Farrell, because I'm trying to understand.
Yeah.
Now, I'm looking at your training record, and I could be missing something, but you haven't taken any program, look like, in about 9 or 10 years.
The programs that are here for me, like I said, I've taken the larger step in my program, in my rehab, and that's accepting Christ in my life. And when I live my life based on those directions. And when I'm going to these programs that are here in the institution, as I said before, I'm not on their priority list other than the one that I volunteer to go to. Okay? And when I don't need a certificate to verify that I'm attending these classes, because that's all they are speech fit. Oh yeah, he went 6 months, he went, you know, to this. I'm going through that process. I got to the point where I teach these classes. I became a peer educator. Okay? And I teach these things because I've gotten away from it. Today, sir, I can happily say I've been sober now since 2005. I haven't had a drink of alcohol since 1995. I have not went in the direction that a lot of people here in this institution are doing. I don't do it anymore. I had an officer say, you don't have many friends. So I've got a lot of friends, but the friends that I don't have, I don't have those who are still doing the things that I used to do. And I'm trying to lead by example by being an older person here in these units. Show these guys. I went to school. I've got a degree. I've got all this education. But the one thing that I didn't have in 1993 when I first left, and that's the one that I said, if I had had, we would be sitting here today. And if I had taken my spiritual training at that time, I would have been okay. I know that.
Okay, so basically what you're saying is that, and you correct me if I'm repeating it wrong, but what I'm hearing you say is that you don't need the program because you have a spiritual path that you're on. Is that what you're telling me?
Yes, in a way, because that spiritual path also entails that I do other things in a positive light. You know, I mean, my job is a program. The job that I have is a reporter. I get guys telling me, man, that reporter, he don't clean up like you. I said, I really don't care. You know, I mean, this is my job. This is not his job. This is what I do. Okay? And if I'm not going to do it to the best of my ability, I'm not going to do it. Well, that's how I have to live that life once I'm released from incarceration. If I'm going to do this time, live life out there on the street, I have to do the best that I have to do no matter what someone else is doing.
Okay, so I'm not disturbed with this, the offense that actually occurred and the allegations that's been made against you, which basically says that you forced entry into a residence for the purpose of committing a burglary. Once you entered inside of the residence, there was an 8-year-old female victim in the bedroom that you blindfolded her, warned her not to make any noises, that you removed her clothing. And while she was laying face down, you proceeded to penetrate her anus, and you had sexual acts with this female, both in the anus and tried to penetrate the vagina. And then a while later, you was arrested trying to burglarize another house. You were found inside of a residence. A neighbor had observed you climbing through the window. However, when you were arrested, you denied committing the first burglary where the sexual assault occurred. Is that right?
That's what's in your report. That's not what I'm saying. I did.
Okay, so you said that you had a spiritual path. Now, why don't you tell me what you did?
One thing that I didn't do is molest this little girl. I've never been to that home. I explained that to him. I had proof, but this is 1970-something. And like I said, I knew in my heart. My mother knew in her heart. I just didn't have the right defense. I didn't have the right defense because there's other information that no one has, or they never read it into the report where he's, you know, the girl gave a description of the individual. And for some reason, it never fit me.
So they said when you were arrested, they say at least one piece of jewelry found on you had been taken in the previous burglary where the girl essentially assaulted.
And I say it didn't.
Okay.
But no one other than me had the proof because it was there. I showed them the proof of the paperwork that I brought that ring.
Okay, so back when this first happened in the pre-sentence report, there's a statement that the officer who was writing the pre-sentence report made. It says that this writer sees no reason why the defendant should receive probation now. He consistently refuses to face up to his own actions and instead of conduct kingdom presents a demeanor of evasion and deceit. And it kind of sounds like to me that's the same. I mean, you doing the same thing, you know, during this hearing.
I couldn't hear you.
So it sounds like you're doing the same thing. That's what I get out of this hearing today, that you're not facing up to your own actions. Everything is a reflection off of you onto someone else. But you're not taking any programming. You are say that you're on a spiritual path right now, but you're not doing any program. You appear to be, everything that's happened to you is somebody else's fault. And
no, sir.
Not your own.
I told you in the beginning, I'm not blaming anyone for the way my life has turned out. I said that in the beginning. But one thing I cannot do is what everybody wants me to do is profess something that I know in my heart and I know that I didn't. And everybody, no one, not one person, seems to say, well, there was basically no other evidence tying this individual to this. It was what one person said over another person. There was no actual, like I said, this person described with this individual who did this to her, what he looked like, described his voice, and said what language he spoke. I only speak one language, but that was all written down. But there was a photograph taken of me at the incident. It did not look like me because if you couldn't tell an African American with an Afro as big as one as I had, and I'm pretty sure back in those days most people knew who were African Americans and who were not. That's what got me. Okay? The clothes that I had on. None of that was brought into play. What that person described that she saw the individual wearing, what the neighbors across the street described, what the people in front of the house had on, matched the same thing as this person was saying. So, what else can I say other than the fact when I stood before the judge, when I stood in that courtroom, I said I was innocent of this. I said that, and I am not. I cannot change that, sir. I'm sad about what happened to this individual. That's something that never I could do. And I have my reasons to say why I could never do anything like that. That would be, that's not in the nature of the way my parents raised me. And when my mother looked at me and one person that I can't lie to was her, I told her the truth. I said, no, Mom, I didn't do it. I told the judge, no, I didn't do it. I went to
three attorneys doing this process to try to get somebody here and hear my voice. But that wasn't happening. That didn't happen. So what I did, I came here and I did take a lot of programs. I don't know what ones that you're saying that I needed to take or recommending that I take, but believe me, I've gone through every program that the Department of Corrections has offered. For my sake, I went through drug class. I went through a sexual sex class. I did all of that. In fact, this board ordered me to go through sex counseling in 1993. 1993, this board ordered me to seek counseling for 6 months. And a report came back to the board. But that report is never read for that. And this is on the streets. This is not in the institution. That report is never mentioned in these hearings of what I did go through.
Okay, sir, I'm going to see if the board has any additional questions for you, sir. Mr. King on this.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Fiorello?
Yes, sir.
Just a question here. And I recognize it's pointed, but I'm trying to figure out where you're at in your personal development, so just bear with me. But it looks like that you were granted parole at the age of 34, and this is, I'm going on like just looking at the dates, 34, 42, 45, 46, 54, and 56. So at the age of 56, you returned to the Department of Corrections, correct?
Yes.
So how have you developed in these last 3 years that would convince me that we can return to the community? Because I don't think I've seen anyone get as many chances as you have had to return to the community and be revoked. So what has happened in the last 3 years that has made you a responsible and well-adjusted person?
Thank you for asking the question. In the past 3 years, like I said, I had a lot of ups and downs inside the prison. You know, as I've had a battle through, like I said, with the assaults that came about, the property being stolen, things like that. But the path that I continued to stay on was my path. My spiritual growth has increased, number one. And I'm proud of that because during the time after the assault in Yuma, I was in lockup, and it was when I had a parole hearing, and I reminded the board members I was in lockup. And that was the time that I took, because I was in that cell for 7.5 months by myself, to really, really examine me as an individual. Now, granted, I didn't do a lot of things right. And I sat there, I would write it down and say, I had a parole. Talk to the PO, and trust them more and explain to them, but I didn't. That was a mistake. If I had any confidence to sit up, and go talk to my family, what I went through while I was incarcerated the first time, maybe that would have gotten some of the attention off of me that I have tried to tell people you should never take on. And when I went to that first counseling session that the board ordered in 93, I got a lot of things off my chest, and we discussed a lot of things. And that six-month period made me feel more at ease. Well, that's what I wanted to do when I got out. And when I was released this last time, that's when I'd be going to the VA, and I explained to the board I was going to the VA, going to PTSD classes. I was going to the VA for my smoking classes. I was spending more time at the VA, going through programs through that VA, trying to get my thoughts back right, trying to get myself back and understanding. Okay? And that's what the direction I was going before I came back. And I'd like to remind you, I'm just only back in this institution today because me and a fellow ex-convict got into an argument. not anything violent. No one has called for border patrol officer, police department. I'm here because I'm at a halfway house. For the simple fact that two of us couldn't get along, we had an argument. Nothing more, nothing else. It had nothing to do with drugs. It had nothing to do with that community or anything else. The parole officer knew what my daily routine was. So I was on that path until I wrote it down, and I like to say to you, this is what my problem was. The thing that I couldn't control was my tongue. And if I had a control of my tongue, at that moment, I wouldn't be here today. And I thought about that tremendously. And a lot of people said, man, you know, there's a lot of things about when you say things, it does have an effect. And what I've learned, even now, when people want to start arguing, I have a thing that I say, hold that thought, walk away. And if I had done that, Mr. Quinones, I would be here today. I would not be here today. But that's the only reason I'm here.
I have one follow-up question that's related to your original crime, and I'm looking for a short response because I recognize that you have good speaking skills, but this case was appealed. You're a clear speaker. This case was appealed in December of 1980, and it was affirmed. You know, the conviction was upheld. So it's a simple question. Why did you have a piece of jewelry from the original burglary that you claimed you weren't involved with?
From the original burglary?
Yes. You said you weren't involved in that burglary. You said you didn't molest or rape that child. You were arrested with a piece of jewelry from that house. Why did you have that?
Why did I have it? And I just explained that to Mr. Johnson. That was my jewelry. It was a man's turquoise ring that I had purchased at the Pond Central Pond in 1977, right on Central Avenue. I know exactly where I got that ring from, and I told them I had the receipt for it. That's where I bought my ring. And for somebody to say that it belonged to them, no. It was mine.
Okay.
And I could never prove that due to the fact that I'm incarcerated. The paperwork that I had on it was somewhere else. There's nothing I can do. I even mentioned that to my lawyer. I mentioned that to him. Well, that's not going to come up.
Oh, okay. I asked for a short response. I just wanted to be clear on that. Thank you, Mr. Flewellen.
You're welcome, sir.
Okay, so I don't see any, Mr. Dr. I.
Well, you've probably answered this, sir, a number of times, but I just want to make sure that I understand, sir. If you know that this board cannot retry you, therefore we are seeking the truth. So are you telling this board that you, well, what are you telling this boy? Why are you incarcerated at this time? I'm going back to the original offense itself. So, in your mind, why are you incarcerated? Why were you incarcerated in the first place, sir?
Truthfully, I just didn't know what I was doing. You know, I said this. When I pled guilty to these charges, right? But when I realized what I had done, it was too late. I tried to get that plea agreement taken back, and I wanted my day in court. Nobody wants to mention that. I tried and asked the judge, I want to take this back. Because something's not right, and it had no idea that I would be dealing with today what I'm dealing with as far as the charges that were dismissed. But I asked, and they filed the documents. The lawyer that I had, they replaced him and bought another one. Okay? trusted him. My mom and dad paid for another lawyer. He did something wrong. So it was like, I don't know what else to do. I don't. But I honestly tried to have this plea agreement, take it back, and I asked for my day in court. And they refused that. So to say why I refused to act accordingly, because I could never prove my innocence, and I still can't prove my innocence. So what I did do, I came into this institution, and I did the best change that I could possibly take, especially during that era of prison life in the Arizona system. I did far better than most people could expect during that period of time. Arizona, when I got to this prison, was the worst prison in the country for killing. I'm still alive.
Okay, sir, I appreciate all of that. So let me just ask one other question. You said that you got on the spiritual path. When did you do that? So about what year, like what point in your life did you actually move in that direction, sir?
1999, up until that period of time, I was a practicing Muslim. I saw a brother named Johnny Good, and the one thing that I saw about this man, you know, was just something about him. And I sat down and talked with him, and he was the first person to introduce me to Jesus Christ. Okay, and I started studying and reading. I've never read the King James Bible before in my life, because I had been reading the Quran all my life. this won't sound crazy to you, but under Islamic law, when a person converts to Christianity, he's considered an infidel. Well, one day I so happened to come back to the unit after accepting Christ in my life, and told the Muslim brothers that I was a Christian. And it wasn't 2 days later that I was beaten down so bad, I could barely walk. But that's what I took. But one thing that my studies began, I started reading, I said, well, you know, I communicated, I started going about services here in the institution. And what I found out about Johnny was that I wasn't getting out of Islam. There was no love in Islam. There was none. You know, there was no, I care about you, like, you know, no matter who you are, or what you are, or what color you are, it was none of that. You know, that's what I have been looking for. I have been looking for what was in my heart all my life.
Okay, so I think for time management purposes, I think I understand what you're saying, and I appreciate everything that you're saying, sir. So thank you so very much, and thank you, Honorable Mr. Johnson.
Thank you. So we're going to come up on a conclusion of your hearing. I just want to make a comment on something that you told Mr. Quinones, that you tried everything you could to go to trial and have your plea withdrawn, but I'm looking at your appeal here to the Supreme Court of the state of Arizona, and in here it says that you were charged with rape, sodomy, lewd, lascivious acts, burglary first degree, and burglary first degree by arm. And it says after some pre-trial motion, the case proceeded to trial. It says after the jury was impaneled, but before any evidence was presented, the state and the defendant, you and your attorney, entered into a plea agreement for the defendant for you to plead guilty to burglary first degree with a prior conviction and burglary first degree by arm. When the other charges of rape, sodomy, and lewd and lascivious acts was dismissed. But it says there here that the trial judge made extensive inquiries to determine the voluntariness of your plea. After determining that the plea was knowingly, voluntary, and intelligently, the court found that you were guilty of both burglary charges. I mean, that's not the sentencing judge. That's the appeal coming from the Supreme Court where you appeal the case. And it doesn't sound as though you were trying to go to trial, is that at the last minute?
The sentencing judge said the appeal court read from what the sentencing judge said, not the sentencing judge did, because I was, the appeal court took rule on that matter as far as saying that they see that the plea was knowingly intelligent to be made. That was the comments from the judge, okay? But they ruled that there was no, I can't remember, there was no evidence to overturn it. Could I ask a question? Is it possible, could I take a brief a bathroom break? I'm on glacier here, and I have to go.
All right.
Thank you.
Since he's taking a 5-minute break, why don't we take a 5-minute break?
Good idea.
Should as well. Go off the record?
Yes, ma'am. We're all on a 5-minute break.